I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
You're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast, the official UK podcast for the Seattle Seahawks. Here are your hosts, Ross Bell, Stuart Court, and Adam Nathan. Go Hawks!
Yes, thank you for tuning in to yet another Pedestrian Podcast. The 50 is up for the Pedestrian Podcast this week, and we are basking in the glory and the glow of what was game of 2017 so far, as the Seahawks and Texans just traded all sorts of offensive blows until the finish to end all finishes. To do that, myself, Stuart Court, at this part of the show, Ross will be joining me later, is Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
Good. It is, don't know, it feels good being a Seahawks fan at the minute. I'm pumped.
It was quite something on Sunday, wasn't it? All the records just kept on falling.
I think it was literally record-breaking for a number of reasons, and it was just so much fun to watch every time we had the ball, which hasn't happened probably since the Patriots game last year, maybe the Eagles game last year.
Yeah, I think before that as well, it's been a long time since we've had all of that offense. I mean, as I said to you, I don't think I celebrated anything like that for quite a few years, as I did at the end of the game on Sunday. It was just the offense could do no wrong, could they?
Yeah, I definitely thought we were going to score again, regardless. I got a little bit antsy when they threw the pick. I thought maybe that was going to be it, because Deshaun Watson put in probably the best performance I've ever seen from a quarterback at CenturyLink in the Wilson era. And so I was a bit worried they'd pick up the two first downs and whatever. And then we didn't use a timeout on that, because they actually did pick up a first down, but we used the 2-minute warning to stop the clock. And I thought, oh, maybe we're struggling here. But, you know, much as you can criticize the defense for a lackluster or so performance, they still got three picks and they made the stop when it really, really mattered. And ultimately, the whole mantra is you can't win a game in the first, second, third, whatever quarter. Well, the defense got it done in the fourth quarter when it really, really mattered.
But it was quite a day, really, wasn't it, for Russell Wilson? Obviously, Watson had his half of the bargain, but Russell Wilson finished the game 26-41, 4-5-2, four touchdowns and one interception. And obviously, as you say, and the four rushing attempts for 30 yards. But it was both quarterbacks just absolutely put on the show, didn't they?
It was insane. I mean, both quarterbacks broke records. Wilson's the first guy ever to run for 25, throw for 450, and throw four touchdowns. And Deshaun is the first guy to throw for 400, run for 50, and throw four touchdowns. So it's just a ridiculous game of quarterbacking. And, you know, in a league that is desperately short of quality quarterbacks, it's just so cool to see what two guys at the top of their game can do. And, you know, ultimately, there'll be times in a season when you work out what your team is. I mean, we've discussed this loads of times, you know, before playing the Rams and the Giants. We both said to each other privately or whatever, like, we're going to know what this team is after today. And, you know, you can't always rely on the defense to be there. It's 2017. The game is set up for good offense. And at 14 apiece, I think I said to you, like, well, we're going to see if the offense can win us a game when the defense can't do it. And ultimately, it's great to know that, you know, the offense is still the baby brother of the defense. But if we need them to be big and win us a game, we've seen them do it, albeit they weren't playing against the greatest defense in the world, but they've done it.
But of all the weird anomalies in this game on Sunday, possibly nothing is stranger than the fact that Russell Wilson accounted for 482 yards on the 30 times he did anything with the ball. And the Seahawks ended the day with 479 yards. Quite something.
Well, I mean, if you will run Eddie Lacy straight into Jadeveon Clowney like 12 times in a game, then that's what's going to happen. It's funny because I actually had this game down as a loss at the start of the season, but I figured it was going to be a loss. The best way I can describe it is, do you remember the Rams game where Chris Long was celebrating in front of the Seahawks fans on the sideline?
No.
It was a couple of years ago. We lost to them. It was the last Fisher win at CenturyLink. And also the first Cardinals win at CenturyLink, I think, was the first home game Wilson ever lost. I thought it was going to be a really, like, I'm talking about in August, I thought it was going to be a turgid, like, we can't run the ball against the best defensive front in the league, like 17-9 type thing. And I just couldn't have been more wrong, because obviously they did have a couple of defensive players missing. But the way that Wilson just exploded the offense, it was just awesome. It was so much fun to watch. And I think we have the Jazz Flute and Luke Wilson to thank for that on Techno Thursdays, because he's managed to imbue some personality into Wilson. And without that, I'm not sure where we'd
it's been quite a weird few days in Russell Wilson land. Obviously, there's something which you called the greatest thing to ever happen. Happened on Thursday, and then on Sunday, the way he celebrated the Graham touchdown.
It was brilliant. I'm not sure. Well, if you've not seen it now, then I don't know where you've been, but go and find the video from practice last Thursday of Jimmy Graham grabbing a cardboard box. This is going to sound very surreal, but just go with me. Jimmy Graham grabs a cardboard box, which for no reason is in a practice field, runs it onto the field in the middle of a scrimmage. Tanner McAvoy jumps inside it.
No, McAvoy wearing a Macklemore jersey.
Sorry, Tanner McAvoy with a Macklemore branded jersey on, jumps in the box, and the whole tight end and I think fullback and Eddie Lacy unit dance around him playing imaginary jazz flutes.
Yeah, it's quite a sight. They kind of like snake charming McAvoy Macklemore out of the box. It's quite something. Yeah. And then obviously Sunday when he appears in the end zone doing the jazz flute piper stick as well, Russell Wilson. It's been quite a weird few days. Yeah, but the best thing also about the McAvoy thing is that Luke Wilson said that the McAvoy wasn't aware that his jersey said Macklemore, that they swapped out at lunch, which is just possibly the greatest thing. That's...
You're joking.
No, he said that. That's what he said. He said that he wasn't aware. He just thought he had a normal jersey. And then when they went for lunch, I guess they practiced twice that day, they swapped the jersey out and put Macklemore in it. His McAvoy one was in the locker room. Russell Wilson on Sunday, though, did have four completions of 48-plus yards versus the Texans. It hadn't been done in the NFL since Randall Cunningham did it in 1998. It was just a case of heaving the ball all over and halfway up to Renton, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I was to draw up the most Sandlot style of Seahawks offense, because ultimately I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I'd be sending Lockett and Richardson deep, and I'd have Jimmy Graham and Doug Baldwin coming on, you know, on crosses and underneath. And that's sort of what they were doing. I mean, it was play action every play in the fourth quarter. Why the Texans kept biting, I have no idea, because they're more likely to give it to me than give it to a run. Because the run game was so bad. And yet, I mean, Wilson was holding the ball out almost as like just a courtesy to the game. You know, here's me presenting a play action, which I'm never going to do. It was literally just out and back in before Rawls or Lacy even had the chance to put their hands out. It was ridiculous. But every time the cornerbacks were biting, and we were just sending the fast guys deep. And, you know, it sounds basic, but it was working. And, you know, they made A, incredible catches. B, they made a lot of heads up plays. I think Tyler Lockett said that he'd been coached to run straight into the middle after he caught the ball for the I think, was that the play just before the Graham touchdown?
Yeah, apparently Texans thought they were going to spike it, which is why they're all a bit...
Yeah, I was expecting a spike as well, but then I saw them lining up with, I guess, 24 seconds, and you think, well, they might as well go for it and see what they can get. And it was insane. I mean, it was just brilliant. It was so fun. And yeah, as you say, apart from, I think, the Patriots game where I was watching it in a big bar in Seattle with, like, about 1,000 people, so you do celebrate a lot. You know, ultimately we watch a lot of these games by ourselves, and there's not a lot that gets me running around the room, but that last touchdown was just, I mean, Rosie was hearing some noises. God knows what she was thinking.
Yeah, I had to apologize send an apology up to my dad in case I woke up. I think if we repeat this Sunday, I might be booted out of the house. Obviously there's no better example of all the madness and how much hard work it was on Sunday than Steve Rabel's commentary on the game-winning and game-sealing plays. Here's how they sounded.
33-32, Russell gets the offense to the line. Is he going to slam it down, or is he going to make a play? He takes the snap. He's going to look downfield. He's going to throw. Jimmy Graham, touchdown, Seahawks. Jimmy Graham on a shot right down the middle of the field. Are you kidding me? Holy catfish, what a play, what a drive, an 18-yard play, and the 12s are going nuts. Seattle brings its defensive front up close, but then the DBs all drop back. Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright along with them, 15 yards from the line of scrimmage. Watson takes a shotgun snap, has time, looks, throws down the seam. Woo! It's intercepted. Richard Sherman intercepts. It's all over. The Seahawks are going to win this game. Richard Sherman intercepts at the 40, and the Seahawks are going to win. What a game. What a game.
That's a perfect example of what it was like on Sunday, didn't it?
It sounded like me on Monday morning. I was knackered. I don't know what was going on. I think, I don't know what it is, but like, I guess the Seahawks can be a little bit annoying sometimes. And, you know, they've got their tropes that can be a little bit frustrating or whatever. But I always find that I reset myself when I go back and see a game and I realize just how much I absolutely love them. And I guess the first game after being there at the Giants game, I was just so, so fully invested on Sunday. Not that I'm not always fully invested, but there's just that extra spark when you remember why you love this team. I just never thought we were going to win. I just had so much faith in them to get it done.
Paul Richardson was one of the main stars of the show on Sunday. Those 6 catches on 7 targets, 105 yards and 2 touchdowns. Should have been 3, as he did catch one in the end zone, but it was ruled out after his needless and a bit of a stupid chop block penalty on Thomas Rawls, where he didn't really need to chop block. But you said, and someone else has brought up as a member's listener's question, we'll get to a bit later, that Richardson is now really WR2.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think he had 6 targets because I'm not fully convinced that the first touchdown he caught was to him.
No, the one of the mic'd up things shows that Wilson looking his way the whole time during the play. So I know we said
really?
But yeah, I do think it was meant for him on Sunday.
Oh, fair enough. Because when I was watching, I think I messaged you saying that I thought he'd nick one off Baldwin just because, you know, scramble drill and whatever.
Yeah.
I think that Tyler Lockett is an exceptional receiver inside the 20s. Sorry, like between the 20s. But there's something about Richardson who has a clutch gene in him, and he's scoring touchdowns. I mean, he must be up onto what, like 4 or 5 this year?
5, though, I think. It might be 6, but I'm pretty certain the one was 6.
And I think the way he goes up and gets it, you know, despite the fact that he's not the tallest, I think he's moving into the sort of must-pay category now. And I don't think he'd cost that much, but you know, you have to spend some money on your offense, and I think he's moving into that category.
Yeah, as I said, there was 4 receivers who had long catches. Richardson's long as 48, Tyler McElroy is 53, Jimmy Graham had just 18, Tyler Lockett 54, and Trey Madden is 1 for 66. And Jackson Bevins, as Jackson Bevins said,
his only catch of the season, by the way.
As Jackson Bevins said, the reason he was so far open is because the Texans, and as Jackson Bevins said on his Cigar Thoughts on Sunday, the reason he came out so far open is because the Texans had forgotten that he was still in the NFL. But despite the talk we just had of Richardson being obviously two, the fact that we've got 3 receivers like Lockett finished a leading receiver for the Seahawks, 6 catches, 121. It's quite a weapon to have, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Tyler Lockett play is the sort of floated past on the left sideline where he grabs it over his right shoulder, and it's like that picks up 25 to 30 yards, and it's awesome. And I don't mean to sort of denigrate Lockett at all. I just think Richardson, as an all-round receiver, is probably giving us a little bit more than Lockett is. But maybe I'm getting pissed off a bit with Lockett because the return game is just so bad, and that's not necessarily his fault, but we just can't seem to get anything on a punt or a kick return, which is probably why I'm nudging Richardson in front at the minute.
Yeah, it's just really weird with the special teams because we seem to spend so much money and time in the offseason to address it and to shore it up. Obviously, DJ Alexander is the main trade they made, and Garvin, the people at, and I think Shaq Griffin's a big part on special teams. I mean, I'm not too sure the snap counts, but it's just doesn't seem to
be anything. And they're so good the other way.
Yeah, exactly. And Nico Thorpe's still doing what he does as a gunner. I say Shaq Griffin's the other gunner, I'm not too sure. But it is frustrating, and it is kind of a detriment to Lockett, I think, isn't it? With all that chaos going on around him with Richardson, Madden and Lockett, Doug Baldwin had a quiet 6 catch off 10 target, 54-yard day, but he also possibly had the best catch of the lot, didn't he? That was one-hander over the middle. It's just no one seems to be talking about.
That was like one of the great
catches. And it's like the fifth thing that people 15th thing people are talking about on Sunday.
Yeah, it was insane. But, you know, if we can find a way to get 378 yards or whatever that don't go to Doug Baldwin, in the long run for the team, that can only be a good thing. And Doug's not going anywhere. So from the interviews that you heard of him in the locker room after the game, he was the happiest of everyone that the guys around him were contributing. And that's really good to see.
Yeah, I think it was 398 yards receiving to receivers, running backs, tight ends, whatever, that weren't named Doug Baldwin, which is definitely something which is hopefully sustainable.
Well, it certainly means that you're a lot more rounded in the Rams game and the Giants game, and certainly in the first half, it was almost embarrassing how often they had to go to Doug.
Yeah.
You know, the number of catches he was making was remarkable. So I'm not going to complain if they've got four or five other options that can make plays. I mean, Darbo made a couple of nice catches again. He has been very solid, if not spectacular, you'd have to say, in the stuff he's been asked to do so far. Even that ridiculous play in Green Bay when he got, you know, carried away like Aladdin. you know, so they're contributing, and that's good.
Yeah, the only players on the Seahawks offense didn't get a catch on Sunday were Luke Wilson, Eddie Lacy, and Thomas Rawls.
Both of whom had atrocious drops, Wilson and Rawls.
Yeah, they were. I mean, Wilson's was bad, but Rawls is as good as Wilson is at the 40, 50-yard dart downfield. He's just struggled weirdly with the 2-yard fade, didn't he? The 2-yard floater.
He could have thrown it up in the air and blown it over.
It was a strange, strange play. And obviously, the only other guy on offense we haven't spoke about as of yet is number 88, Jimmy Graham, who, after yet another Sunday morning of just nonsense, Ian Rappaport and all that nonsense, and also a lot of criticisms about his play and how easy he was to get rid and how the team should. He come up in the clutch, two fourth quarter touchdowns, 39 yards and a 4-catch day of 5 targets on a day where he really, after quite first half, really told the people who, the detractors, the people who didn't want him on the field on Sunday morning, they really, it's kind of just a case of this, isn't it?
Very good, Stu. You come at the boss, you best not miss, and you've done very well there. 100%.
It's just,
I mean, it's not, you know, it's not for me to tell you that Jimmy Graham is a good player and shouldn't be on the team. Let's be honest. I mean, no one bangs the drum as much as I do when it comes to that. And it would be very, very, you know, even if all Sunday does is just stop people talking about it, I would be very happy. And the fact the trade deadline has passed makes everything a lot easier to stomach, and we can just get on with Jimmy Graham scoring touchdowns, because that's 4 in his last 3 games now.
It is, yeah. And he's I was wrong last week. He's still 3 behind. He's got 12 touchdowns in his Seahawks career. He's 3 behind Jeremy Stevens, the end of the year of 15. But he's well on his way to breaking all of that. He's still the top tight end for the Seahawks. Yeah, but obviously leaving Jimmy Graham in the final play, the game-winning play, which turned out to be the game-winning score. Jimmy Graham was left all alone, which is a bold strategy, Cotton, with 19 seconds in it, as the saying goes.
Yeah, let's see if that pays off. Well, it paid off for us. It was a weird one. I think they were just so thrown off by the fact we didn't spike the ball. And it's another one of those examples where the Seahawks in hurry up seem, you know, just seem to know what's clicking. And when Wilson runs the offense, not that they did anything wrong for the rest of the game, but they just seem very comfortable when they have to hurry it up. And it's really cool that Graham is the first target on a play like that. You know, if he's not the first target, then he probably became it by being so open, but he looked to be the first progression on that play. So it's obviously something they'd noticed. I think you said on the Trey Madden play that the Seahawks had clearly done a lot of tape work, because every single player had their back to the middle of the field.
But I can't remember if that was play action, but when Madden breaks through the second level behind the linebacker's a yard away, and he could not be have his back turned to him anymore. And Russell Wilson goes, thank you very much. And 66 yards is probably the longest play all the year to a fullback. I'd be surprised if it's not for a couple of years as well.
100%. And it also probably proves that, yet again, Darrell Bevell has silenced a few haters on Sunday, because he's been calling great games all season. Like, there's there's not a lot you can have against him anymore. No. The attritional starts are often leading to explosive finishes. If you look at the stats of how we're outscoring teams in the fourth quarter of games, it suggests very clearly that is the plan. That by the time the fourth quarter comes, we've worn you down, and we know what we're going to do, and we're going to score on you. And we've scored pretty much at will in the fourth quarter when we've had to.
Yeah, I think with the Seahawks and most teams, I think the first 15 plays are always scripted. 15-20, I think Andy Reid's team wanted more. But that's just a part of the week where Pico was so entrenched in the game plan. And from there, it's from what they learn off those plays and they go from there, don't they?
Yeah, and that we do try and establish the rush, which, let's be honest, that needs a lot of work. And, hopefully someone like Dwayne Brown coming in can certainly help. The first 15 plays are always the scripted ones, but they almost seem to use the script in order to just, learn stuff as opposed to score points, which, again, is a risky strategy because you could get blown out, but they've got enough faith in the team around them that whatever hole they're in, within reason, they can get themselves out of.
As good as the receiving game and the quarterback played on Sunday, the running game was an absolute abomination on Sunday. J.D. McKissic was the leading running back rusher with 6 yards on 4 carries. Eddie Lacy somehow managed to achieve the feat of a long of 3 yards as he went 6 carries for 0 yards. The Wolves went one step better, the long of 3 yards, -1 yard overall, though, on 6 carries. It wasn't great, was it?
There's just nothing you can say about how shite that was. It was just terrible. But
running at Clowney was a bold strategy yet again, though, wasn't it? I mean, it's something we did with Donald a few weeks ago. Running at the monster in the defensive line. It's a weird one.
It's systemic, it's personnel, it's everything, really. And it's so stupid that the offensive line could actually be really solid and pass pro and so awful in run blocking. I have no answers, and I guess we're just going to have to see if it works out or not.
But on the offense on the whole, Russell Wilson, he really did insert himself into the MVP conversation on Sunday.
Yeah, he's one of those players that I think it's in the matrix of this podcast, you're going to discuss in some capacity a listener question about him being underrated or whatever. But he is one of those guys that sort of sat in the middle of, he's not a young quarterback that's coming into the league like a Jameis Winston or Mariota or Jared Goff or Kaiser, the Trubisky or whatever. And he's not an old veteran like Breeze, Rodgers, Brady and Roethlisberger. So he doesn't really get talked about because he's sort of sat in the middle of those guys with no one else really apart from, Andrew Luck and Kirk Cousins, but and that group always seems to get overlooked a lot for stuff like that because Wilson's probably the only one of them that is truly elite. But I think certainly the last 4 or 5 weeks, he is certainly working his way well into the MVP conversation, which I think is currently being led fairly handsomely by Tom Brady, but we'll see how that goes as the season progresses.
But running out straight at someone like Clowney is quite a bold thing, and they kept doing it. And Clowney's a monster, isn't he?
Yeah, and if anything, the only sack that Clowney had resulted in a Seahawks first down, which is a very strange thing to happen because the sack resulted in the fumble that Luke Wilson very intelligently covered. So just to add to the bizarreness of the game that was Sunday, Clowney is a complete freak of a human being. I mean, he is so big and so dominant that the only thing they did wrong with regards to him was run straight at him because in pass protection, Odhiambo held up pretty well for the majority of the time. Running left constantly was a very confusing ploy, but that they know it better than me, so whatever, they obviously had their reasons. I thought overall in pass protection that they held up pretty well, especially with the fact they could establish read options so regularly and give Wilson a fairly clean pocket to throw out of is only encouraging.
it was quite a good day for the airline. The pass pro, the run game, as we said, wasn't great, but the pass pro is there's a lot of people slating the airline still, but They're getting there, and obviously there's a lot of people slating the line, but they're getting there slowly, aren't they? The defensive side there, the Seahawks did come up against a bit of a buzzsaw in the Texans offense. I mean, Deshaun Watson, he's the guy who played like no one ever has in the quarterback position. That was something spectacular. And so some of the play calling designs were just phenomenal, weren't they?
When they touch, turn to gold. It was brilliant. The big players all stepped up and made big important plays. You know, we forget that we had an Earl Thomas like 75-yard pick six. Not even mentioned yet.
No.
Richard Sherman, two interceptions to ice the game when some idiots on Twitter talking about Deshaun Watson putting a clown suit on him. Yeah, it was just wild.
Yeah.
Just completely wild.
Yeah. And talking about Thomas, as we've already heard from Steve Rabel a bit earlier, this is how, after he was beat by Will Fuller early in the game, this is how the next play ended, as they tested Sherman across the middle with Hopkins, and they forgot about Area 29 lurking just beyond the line of scrimmage.
The three receivers near side. Watson out of the shotgun on third and 10. Miller stays in the backfield. Four-man rush. Watson throws down the middle. It's intercepted. It's Earl Thomas coming back near side. He can go midfield 40, 35. He's going to go 20, 10, 5. No flags. Touchdown, Seahawks. Earl Thomas picks it off. You can beat him once, but don't try him again. And he takes it to the house. The pick six, and the Seahawks are a point away from tying this up.
Yeah, but up the defensive line, there's a lot of questions with all the Texans seem to come at them, so they just tried to keep off balance, but they still got there. Five sacks on Sunday, obviously, and when it mattered at the end, the defense stood up as well. And the defense stood up as well with Bennett and Clark, Bennett and Richardson.
Yeah, and Frank Clark, Naz Jones, all contributed to making some big plays up front.
Yeah.
You know, for a guy as elusive as Watson, they hit him plenty of times, and you know, to sack the guy five times was cool to watch. And ultimately, the sack at the end sort of was the game sealing play, because it forced him into a Hail Mary that. You trust our guys the majority of times against other teams' receivers.
With all that, you sometimes just got to sit back and enjoy what you're watching. Deshaun Watson, the whole game plan was just incredible. Like I said to Dave Bailey, it's just a case of Clemson v. Seahawks. Some of those play designs, it was all the options, where it was left, right, behind him, above him, all sorts. I mean, the play to Will Fuller, the second touchdown, was just a proper showing of that, wasn't it?
It was insane. I mean, it was a good offensive mind in Bill O'Brien, with what looks like an outstanding quarterback in Deshaun Watson off a bye week. And they've got two first-round receivers, which shouldn't be ignored. You know, first-round receivers are invariably good players. And they've got a really nice balance on offense. Lamar Miller ran hard and ran well. Look, it's not ideal to be giving up yards, but, you know, 75-yard screens are annoying and things like that. But sometimes teams are going to put up yards. I mean, and I wonder that if it was Aaron Rodgers putting up those yards, would there be any question marks about the defense? I think Deshaun Watson just deserves to be put in the respect of the category of a quarterback who can blow you apart. He's just
definitely. It's quite weird, though. Hopkins got 200 yards. He's the third receiver to do that in the Pete Carroll era against the Seahawks. And Seahawks have won all three games, which is strange.
Yeah, it was a magic play, that second one. And even the first one, it's like, it's like a dream throw that you would have in a movie. Like, it was just a bomb, and it was awesome.
So yeah. So anyone on defense, who we haven't mentioned, who deserves the one to praise, kind of, we've talked about pretty much everyone. But anyone else?
Blimey, this is a hard one. Let's go with Justin Britt for gutting it out, injured, and nothing really came out the middle against him. We'll give him a shout.
I think Jermaine Ifedi should be the guy.
You just can't give up 25 yards of penalties in one drive. It just looks really stupid.
No, but I do think Jermaine Ifedi should be the guy. He's having quite a good season at right tackle. There's some weird people who thought Dwayne Brown, who we'll get to in a sec, should move in at right tackle, but those people don't understand left and right. And after, obviously, with these two interceptions on Sunday, Richard Sherman now moves into a tie with Ken Easy, closing in on the top of the charts for interceptions, which isn't bad for the 72nd best cornerback in the game and someone who's rarely targeted.
Yeah, that's weird for someone who is obviously not very good at all, how that might happen. I have to do some reassessing, and maybe he is just the GOAT.
Yeah, and Griffin's third game against someone like Hopkins isn't there. You got bullied a couple of times, but...
And Griffin, again, had one of those games where he had a couple of moments which he may want back. But overall, I thought he put in a decent shift.
Yeah, since the game, though, on Sunday, the team have made a couple of moves. A big move, obviously, in what was a busy NFL trade deadline coming, where they sent which appeared to send Jeremy Lane to Houston in return of Dwayne Brown. Obviously, the deal has changed. What were your initial thoughts with Jeremy Lane included?
I was more of a fan of that deal than I am how it's worked out now. But ultimately, I think they'll find a way to trade back and get those get at least a pick back that they lost in the second deal. I think the team's in win now mode. And as we said last night on WhatsApp, you know, win a Super Bowl, you can do what the hell you want. Don't really care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's aggressive, but if it ends in a Super Bowl, then it's all very much worth it. And it doesn't say a lot for the upcoming draft class for how busy teams were and how quickly they're getting rid of picks, does it?
Okay, so they might get something for him, but you might want the depth. I don't know. I mean, if Wilson has renegotiated a contract to the level where you don't need the extra $2 million or whatever that you might get for Lane's contract on the proviso that someone picks him up when you drop him. You know, you'd probably rather have him than, you know, a Glowinski on the roster going into the second half of the season just because of the depth.
I mean, but with all the deals that happened over the last 48 hours or so, the Seahawks won the day on their deal, helping the team the most, didn't it?
Yeah, I think they did 100%. It would appear that a lot of Eagles fans sort of give a bit of a shrug as to why they weren't the guys going to get Dwayne Brown as opposed to a running back. But they didn't, so not going to complain because he's our guy now. And it'll be interesting to see how the deals transpire. I don't know whether Jimmy Garoppolo is going to go straight in and start for the Niners. I would assume he needs a couple of weeks to learn the playbook and whatever. And ultimately, it's not really in the Niners' interest to start winning now because they might as well get the first-round draft pick for next year. But who knows? I'm happy with what we've done.
But it was good. I'm very happy. I'm very happy to be here. A lot of great relationships to have on this team with guys. Like I said, a great organization with great tradition. And I'm just looking to bring what I can bring to the table to help us win.
So now it's time to preview this week's game after all the madness of last weekend. But obviously this week is the Washington Redskins at CenturyLink Field on Sunday night for a slot in the UK. And to help us do that, help me, myself and Ross do that, we are joined by Mark Bullock. Mark covers the Redskins for the Washington Post. How are we, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Good, just the heart rate and blood pressure is just about returned to normal after Sunday. So first of all, how did you become a Redskins fan and why the Redskins?
So when I was younger, my dad's job took us out to the States, and we were based about 20 minutes outside DC, so it was kind of natural to take on sort of the Washington teams with the Washington sports. So that was basically how I got into all the American sports and particularly the Redskins.
Cool. So over the last few years, it's been a bit up and down, is possibly a fair ways. Almost a nearly men, aren't they, the Redskins?
Yeah, I would say probably more downs than ups. They had the one promising year in 2012 with RG3, and then the ego or the injuries or whatever you have on it destroyed that hope and ripped it away from us. And then we had the Gruden era with Kirk Cousins, where they've nearly been able to make the playoffs, and they've made it once and then got knocked out, and you know that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, the RG3 collapse, I guess it was, started against the Seahawks, didn't it, in that playoff game with the terrible field at FedEx when his knee imploded.
Yes, well, if you believe reports, it started maybe a few weeks earlier when he first got injured, and then the injury was worsened in that Seahawks game, yeah, and to the point where he probably shouldn't have played for the vast majority of it, and you could see him hobbling around the field and trying to play through it, but he probably should have been pulled. But yeah, that was the start of everything spiraling downwards.
Yeah. So headed into the season, what was your confidence level at for the Redskins?
It wasn't particularly high. They had a lot of turnover. They lost their top two receivers in Pierre Garçon and DeSean Jackson. They'd lost Sean McVay to the Rams, and we've seen how well the Rams are doing. I'm sure you guys have seen that. and obviously you can see the kind of impact he has on a team. So to lose him and to lose his top two weapons, and then all of the drama around the GM Scott McLuhan being fired and Kirk Cousins' contract situation and all of that kind of stuff, it kind of led to how on earth are they going to perform on the field. But since then, they've actually done okay, and they've managed to be competitive in all the games, but you know, injuries have taken their toll recently.
Yeah, you're 3-4 currently. The chances of winning the East are gone, aren't they? Philly have got that pretty much wrapped up now.
Yeah, Wentz and the Eagles have definitely got that wrapped up. And we played the Cowboys last week, and it was a sort of a 3-3. Both teams at 3-3, and the winner goes into second place. And with the injuries, it was unlikely. The Redskins were able to win that game, and they were more competitive than I thought they'd be. But the Cowboys came out on top, and so now it's a fight for a second spot in that division.
I want to talk to you about Chris Thompson, because this man has saved my fantasy season a couple of times already this year. He's a phenom catching the ball out of the backfield. Three receiving touchdowns and two rushing touchdowns. He's on course for a historic season if he keeps this up. Can he keep this up?
Well, he is basically their offense at this point. I'd love to say yes, he can definitely keep it up.
So would I.
But it's hard. He's had a lot of success with, as you say, catches out of the backfield. The screen game's been fantastic.
Yeah.
And he's made people miss. But it's hard to say yes, definitely that level of production from a running back out of the backfield can continue. It's really hard to say that, especially I hate to harp on about injuries, but the offensive line going down hurts your screen game. They've lost Jordan Reed recently to take some attention away from him, and they don't have the guys on the outside that really worry defenses. So I would imagine teams will start to crack down on Chris Thompson, but until they do, yeah, he'll be the ridiculous, productive Chris Thompson that he has been so far.
I mean, with the Redskins, every year there seems to be a different guy doing it at running back. Obviously, Rob Kelly, Matt Jones. Is that a scheme thing, or is that just how it kind of falls out?
The way they have it is they normally have a starting running back, who is the guy that will take the bulk of the carries, and then Chris Thompson is their third down back. But this year, Matt Jones fell out of favor, and they cut him. They drafted Samaje Perine in the fourth round, but he hasn't hit the ground running, and he hasn't been quite decisive enough on runs, so he hasn't been the guy. And Rob Kelly has had some injuries. I think he's battled a couple of rib injuries, so he's not been able to go 100% every week. So it's been pretty much Chris Thompson taking a heavier workload than he normally would, which I think in an ideal world they'd love to have Chris Thompson as their every down back.
Yeah.
But he, in college, had suffered a broken back. He's also had, I think he's had ACL injuries, and he has a ridiculously long history list. And it's kind of a miracle that he's still playing football, really. They're very cautious about upping his workload, but certainly he is their most potent weapon in the backfield.
Yeah, look at your stats now, and it's surprising that Jameson Crowder is the second receiver, because it seems that he's been sort of missing for most of the season. Obviously, he had a 100-yard day last weekend. So is he someone who's feeling the effect of Sean McVay's departure more than most in the receiving group?
Yeah, possibly. It's an odd one, because he was expected to take a bigger role this year. He'd been the slot receiver the past couple of years with Pierre and Deshaun on the outside, and obviously they take priority, and then you have Jordan Reed as well, who has to take a lot of priority with number of targets. So Jameson Crowder was kind of the fourth guy, but with Deshaun and Pierre going and Jordan Reed struggling to stay healthy, it was thought J- Jameson Crowder would have a bigger role. And he's moved outside in base packages. He still plays in the slot in three receiver sets. But they've really struggled to get the ball outside the numbers to those outside receivers. And I'm not sure whether that's a Kirk Cousins is struggling to drive the ball outside the numbers, or whether it's a game plan thing where they're trying to use their tight ends and Chris Thompson more often. But yeah, he hasn't had the season we thought he would have had until last week against the Cowboys, where he played mostly in the slot.
Yeah.
And was able to reproduce what he did last year.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite players coming out of college as well. So even though he's a smaller guy, Seahawks have a lot of them. So he has always been someone I've kind of kept track of. Russ,
how's the Terrell Pryor experiment working out for you? Is he's losing snaps to Josh Doctson, isn't he now?
Yes, he was scheduled to come in and be the starting X receiver, and he in training camp he caught headlines because he would make these ridiculous, spectacular one-handed catches on fade balls in the end zone and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But from what the reporters that were there that saw him every day and in drills that weren't just goal line fades, he struggled with timing and getting on the same page as Kirk Cousins, and that has kind of spilled over into the regular season. They've not really been able to get on the same page, and you can see that at times when he's run comebacks and curl routes that are all based on timing, and Kirk Cousins normally would release the ball before the receiver breaks, but with Terrell Pryor he's still not comfortable with him, and he waits for Pryor to break, and then that makes the throw late and the defensive back able to break it up. So yeah, Pryor's lost his snaps and Josh Doctson is the extra receiver now.
Okay. Yeah. You got old man time in the tight end position. He's still chugging away, Vernon Davis. He has memories of playing at CenturyLink.
To be fair, he probably doesn't.
Yeah.
We should make the joke about it, but he quite likely doesn't remember what happened.
No, he should probably be wary of 31. But he's 17 receptions for 312 yards this season. He's having a nice season, isn't he, Vernon?
Yeah, Vernon Ageless is what we're calling him. he doesn't seem to be getting any older. He's been kind of a surprise because everyone thought he was kind of washed up with the Broncos when the 49ers traded him there. And then Scott McLuhan picked him up last year, and he's been great. He has benefited from the scheme, the way they've schemed around their offense, where they run their two tight end sets with Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis, and they'll split Reed out wide, and that will leave Davis one-on-one with the linebacker. And they did it, I think, three times. They did it against the Chiefs, they did it against the Eagles, and they did it against the 49ers, where they split Reed out wide. He drew the attention of a safety, and that left Davis on a linebacker, and they just ran four verticals, and Davis ran up the seam, and they hit him for, I think it was like a 70-yard gain, a 50-yard gain, and a 30-yard gain. But yes, he's still ageless, and he's still very fast, and he's a better blocker than any other tight end that they've got currently, so he plays quite regularly.
Yeah, obviously, on Monday night, the San Francisco 49ers made the move for Jimmy Garoppolo from the Patriots, and you tweeted that you thought it was always going to be Cousins. So where do you see him standing for the rest of the season and moving forward? Because it does seem that they're sort of set, and the way they spoke about Garoppolo, it seems that he's the guy for the foreseeable.
Yeah. I was really surprised when I saw that, actually, because Cousins and Kyle Shanahan have a long relationship. Shanahan was the offensive coordinator when Cousins was drafted. Cousins was supposedly the guy that both Kyle and Mike Shanahan really wanted, but they were forced by ownership to get RG3. And so they've always had this relationship, and he trains with Kyle Shanahan at times in the off season, and he was Kyle Shanahan's guest to the Super Bowl last year. Cool. So it kind of all seemed like a natural progression was for him to leave Washington and go catch up with Kyle in San Francisco. So for them to have moved on and gone with Jimmy Garoppolo is kind of a surprise. But I don't think it will leave Kirk without any suitors at all in the offseason. There's tons of teams with quarterback needs, and there's tons of teams where he would fit in well. I think of the Jaguars would love him probably. The Steelers are one that I've had as a kind of a wild card, where if Ben Roethlisberger decides this is the year to hang it up, they still have quite a loaded offense, and Kirk could come in and take over and
that's a good
job. And run the ship there. So there's plenty of teams that will need a quarterback. So I'm sure Kirk will still get his big payday in the offseason, whoever it's from. But it does take out the obvious natural suitor, which was the 49ers.
Yeah, so do you see him moving on after this year and the Redskins looking for a new quarterback? Or?
Yeah, it's really a tough one because they say all the right things in the press where, we want to keep him, we want to work out a long-term deal, but the contract that they offered him last year was kind of a slap in the face, really. it's hard to say that when they've offered him something like $30 million guaranteed and $50 million in a contract. It's hard to say that's a slap in the face, but with the leverage that they had given him, it really was. And from the reports of certain insiders, Cousins wants to get out as soon as he possibly can, because while he loves Jay Gruden, he loves the personnel in Washington. It's the front office, and particularly Bruce Allen, the president of the team, that he really doesn't get on with and doesn't like. I'd be surprised if he signs a long-term deal. The Skins could still franchise tag him for a third year, which would force him to stay there. But after that, I don't think they can franchise tag for a fourth year. And that would be the tag would pay him $34 million next year, which a ridiculous amount of the salary cap. So it'd be tough to do that, but it is a possibility. But I would think whether it's this offseason or next, Cousins will eventually leave and go elsewhere.
Yeah, on the defensive side, I was saying to Russ a couple of days ago that like the Giants, I think the defensive line is possibly the strength for the Redskins. But then I've just seen that Jonathan Allen and Ioannidis have both landed on IR Ioannidis has broke his hand.
Yes.
And Allen's on IR. Is that a bigger blow on that side of the line than it is on the O-line? Because John Allen was having a nice rookie year, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Him and Ioannidis, they'd been the nickel package interior linemen, and they had been great. They'd been providing lots of pressure from the interior, and they'd allowed they basically stopped quarterbacks stepping up in the pocket, which meant the edge guys, Preston Smith and Ryan Kerrigan, could rush off the edge and get their sacks. So they had been very good. So it is disappointing to lose particularly Jonathan Allen, but Ioannidis as well. He has a broken hand. There's still the chance he may play. I would think he's probably out this week, I would guess, but there is a chance he can play. They're hoping that he can just put a cast on it and play, but obviously hand usage is a big part of line play. It's hard to imagine he'll be as effective as he has been with a cast on his hand.
JPP does all right, doesn't he? So
yeah, true. It's certainly a blow. They neither of them particularly played in the base defense anyway. Jonathan Allen played at times in the base front, but they usually stuck to the sort of bigger run stuffers in the base front. And then when they moved to nickel, Allen and Ioannidis would come in. So it's mainly the pass rushing unit that you'll see has been affected. But I wouldn't say it's as bad as the injuries they've had to the offensive line, but it certainly doesn't help.
We haven't got a running game anyway, so you don't have to worry.
Just looking at the IR list, and like with the Seahawks, there's different names, but with the Redskins, it appears if you said to someone who's the starter at this position, he's on the IR. It appears.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you had all the situation with Stuart Cravens over in the summer.
Yep.
And you've got Phil Taylor, D'Angelo Hall, Mason Foster, Jonathan Allen, your kicker, Trent Murphy, and now Ioannidis is up in the air as well. But that's never a good thing. We've got names like that on a list like that.
Yeah, it is. The injury bug has properly caught the Redskins this year. you love to say, like, it's next man's got to step up and fill the role and what have you, but that's for the standard amount, maybe one or two big name injuries and some depth guys. The Redskins have just been decimated. Like, their offensive line...
Isn't it four of the five starting offensive linemen?
Well, I mean, last week, they were down four of the five starting offensive linemen. They were down three of the five, but Morgan Moses, the right tackle, was playing on two sprained ankles. it was effectively four of the five. And then midway through the game, their left guard, Sean Laval, who is their starting left guard, he got a stinger and now has lost mobility and strength in his arm, so he's a doubt for the game. And obviously Moses still has his two sprained ankles. They had rookie center Chase Roulier was playing, and he played well, but he is still a rookie center.
Yeah.
They had an undrafted free agent, Tyler Catalina, starting at right guard, but then their backup... See, it's so many injuries, right? So they have Trent Williams as their starting left tackle, obviously. He has been playing most of the year on a knee that needs surgery. They know he needs surgery, and it's a 6 to 8 month recovery. But he's been playing through it because the backup left tackle, Ty Ensekhi, he got injured on the one snap he played this year. I think he did some sort of abdominal injury which required surgery, and he's been out. So Trent Williams has been trying to play long enough to let Ty Ensekhi get back, but last week he couldn't go. So TJ Clemmings, who they signed off of, he'd got cut by the Vikings because he was terrible. And so the Redskins signed him at the start of the year to be their fourth tackle. He was the starting left tackle. And as I said, they had the undrafted right guard, Tyler Catalina, playing at right guard. And then TJ Clemmings went down injured during the Cowboys game. So Catalina went from right guard to left tackle.
Oh my God.
They had Tony Bergstrom, who they signed off the street on Wednesday last week, filling in at right guard. And then with Laval going injured, they had Ari Quanjo, who they drafted a few years ago, but then they cut this offseason. And I think he might have been on the Ravens practice squad, but they picked him up off of there literally Saturday. He flew in and played some of the snaps at left guard. So, yeah, the offensive line is a complete mess. And I think after the game, Jay Gruden said... Monday he said they asked him what the situation was with the offensive line. He said, quite honestly, I don't know who my left tackle is. If I had to play tomorrow, I wouldn't know who my left tackle is. So
Frank Clark must be licking his lips.
It's all over the place, really. If it was just one spot, if it was like right guard, you could play around that. But it's because it's every spot.
And their backups.
Their backup. they signed, as I said, they signed Quandre off the practice squad, and they signed Orlando Franklin on Saturday night, and they had to get them in, and in case they had any more injuries, which they did. So I think they have like 12 offensive linemen on the roster right now, just because of injuries. So it's absurd. It really is.
Gruden also said on Monday that Jordan Reed isn't probably going to play.
Yes, he got a hamstring. He pulled up with a hamstring on a comeback route in about 2 minutes into the second quarter. So he pulled up with a hamstring. Niles Paul is the third tight end. He is in the concussion protocol after trying to block Sean Lee in the hole on the touchdown run in the first quarter. He got injured with the concussion protocol, so he is probably out. Well, I don't want to say he probably is out, but with a concussion, you always want to err on the side of caution, so there's a good chance he's out. Jordan Reed, I think he said, is most likely to be out. So that leaves Vernon Davis and rookie Jeremy Sprinkle as the only tight ends on the roster currently. Yes.
Ross, the best name on the Redskins roster is coming. Right. Because it looks like you're about to call up Fish Smithson, doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Fish Smithson. Fish isn't his actual name, but that is fine. And there's a chance they could call him up from the practice squads. They're down to two safeties at the moment as well.
Jesus Christ.
And yeah, Brashad Breeden's questionable as well at corner.
Yeah, we haven't even talked about the secondary. So they're down to two safeties, which is DJ Swearinger, who has been very good. But they had Monte Nicholson, who's a rookie. He had been playing pretty well as well, but he has been battling with a shoulder injury, and he's kind of reckless when he goes into tackles and just throws his shoulder at people. So he's not helping himself particularly. But he has an AC sprain in his shoulder, so he is likely to be out as well. They're down to Swearinger and DeShazer Everett, who was an undrafted corner that they've converted to safety. And he is there currently scheduled to be their starter. But they have D'Angelo Hall on the PUP. He started the season on PUP, and they can call him off the off the PUP list and activate him. But they are waiting till later in the week to see if they can get maybe Brandon Sheriff or Trent Williams healthy enough to play that they can cut an offensive lineman and make a roster spot available. Because they only have two safeties, they'd probably want a fourth guy, especially given D'Angelo Hall is they're still not 100% that he's ready. So Fish Smithson is the guy they could call up from the practice squad.
Well, we got a spare cornerback floating around. We don't want. You can have it if you
want. I mean the injury list is just goes on and on. The press conference after the game. The press conference on Monday from Jay Gruden. I think he spent literally 5 minutes just going through the list of guys saying this guy he's out. This guy injury. This guy injury. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it.
I mean, when that happens, you on like Gruden's CV kind of thing, you have to kind of put like an asterisk next to the record, wouldn't you? Really?
Yeah. That's the most frustrating thing is this is the best their team has looked. So it's the most competitive. Obviously, offensively, they've lost certain players, but they've been competitive. And defense, it's been their best defense they've had probably for at least 5 or 6 years. And it's the most competitive team they've had, and they've been in every game despite all of these injuries. But they, you know, when you get this amount of injuries piling up, there's really not much you can do. And I do hope that they see that the coaching staff has done really well to coach up these guys that they're pulling off the street to start, and be still somewhat competitive in games. I hope they see that and they stick with them and they don't go, well, you lost this year, we'll fire the lot. Because they do have some good coaches. So it would suck to see that, but yes, they are in a bad shape at the moment.
For the players who are able to play on Sunday, Warren Kerrigan is really having another solid year. He's already got 6 sacks, and he's even got himself a pick 6 as well. Is he the one to watch for the Seahawks on Sunday on the defensive side?
I'll give you 3 guys to watch for on Sunday from on the defensive side. Is Ryan Kerrigan certainly one of them. Preston Smith is also having a very good year. He had a rookie year where he broke out. He had 8 sacks, and everyone thought he was going to be the next great pass rusher and going to complement Kerrigan on the other side really well. But last year, he kind of had a down year. He kind of had a sophomore slump. But this year, he's really picked it up. I would say he's probably got more natural talent than Kerrigan. He's a bigger, he's a longer guy. He's much tougher to block, but that's when he turns it on. He's kind of needs to be really fired up and motivated, whereas Kerrigan is relentless and reliable, and he plays every play as if it's his last. So, yes, Kerrigan certainly a guy to watch, and then Zach Brown at linebacker is the third guy to watch out for, and he has been a little bit suspect in coverage, but he's been very good when they blitzed him, and he's been fantastic against the run.
I mean, he's your leading tackler by quite some way, it appears, as well. He's almost at 50 tackles as well.
Yeah, I think he's up there in the NFL in terms of total tackles. If you add assists and combines, he's one of the leaders, if not the leader. So, he provides a sort of a speed to the defense that they've not had in a while. And he's able to outrun guys that trying to run to the edge. He's able to outrun them and get them and make tackles for loss or for minimal gains.
Yeah, one other name on the defense obviously is Josh Norman, who has a couple of years where he was the it player really at the position. Obviously Sherman and Darrell Revis were still around, but a lot of attention was played, rightly so, with the Panthers team a couple of years ago. Some would say that, but this year he's gone about his business a lot quieter, it appears. Obviously, minus all the anthem and Trump stuff, how's his season going?
Well, he's another one that's had missed time with injuries. I think he had a rib. Was it a broken rib? It might have been a broken rib. Where he was out, he missed, I think, 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks. He really wanted to play against the Eagles 2 weeks ago, but the trainers held him out, and he wasn't particularly happy about that. But he played last week. He's been pretty much as advertised. He shut down his side of the field for the most part. In last year, they asked him to play a lot more man coverage. This year, they're letting him play more zone and play a little bit more off, where he can have vision on the quarterback. And that seems to have helped him a little bit and really shut down guys to the point where teams aren't throwing his way. He still plays only one side. He plays left cornerback, kind of like how Sherman does for you guys. Plays that one side and he locks it down, and teams will just put their best receiver on the other side and run the other way, which had been okay because Bashaud Breeland had been having a great year, but then he gets injured, and now we are down to Quinton Dunbar, who's starting opposite Norman, who's playing well as well, but he was an undrafted free agent who was a wide receiver that they converted to cornerback a few years ago.
he gets back Baldwin this week, then that should be fun for him.
But he's been playing well. He's a guy. He has lots of. He's a long-armed corner. He likes to play physical up at the line of scrimmage. He's still obviously new to the position, relatively new to the position, so he can struggle a little bit if he gets beat initially, but if he gets his hands on a guy and jams at the line of scrimmage, he can certainly burp a fight.
Yeah, so what we spoke briefly before we come on air, so, your confidence levels for Sunday with all everything
extremely low.
Into consideration.
Extremely low. Like, if they had 4 out of 5 offensive linemen relatively healthy, I would think the Redskins would have a chance. But with the state of the offensive line, even guys like Brandon Sheriff and Trent Williams might try to suit up and play, and that would certainly help, but they won't be anywhere near 100%. And with the defensive line you guys have got, I would think you guys will take advantage. And I struggle to think the offense will manage to be productive. I like the way the defense matches up against you. I think they would be okay there, especially with the way you guys seem to go up and down. You either score 40 or less than 10. So I would think they would have a decent chance of holding you in check there, but offensively I don't see a way for the Redskins to score enough points to win this game.
Russ,
who's the one Seahawk you're looking out for most this week to potentially just end the game for you?
Probably. I mean, pick one of your defensive linemen. They'll all probably do something. I would guess maybe Richardson or Frank Clark. It depends if Trent Williams starts. If Trent Williams starts, even if he's nowhere near 100%, he's still one of the best left tackles in the league. So he would. I'd imagine he would give Frank Clark a pretty good game. But if he doesn't, then I have no idea who's going to be the left tackle, so Clark will probably destroy whoever it is.
Any Seahawks offensive players you want to don't particularly want to see get the ball often?
Russell Wilson. can I say that? We've always had issues with quarterbacks that can extend plays out of the pocket. And with your offensive line, Russell Wilson has become an expert at doing that. And with the lack of interior pressure now, I fear he'll be able to step up and out of the pocket when Kerrion and Smith come off the edge. And those guys can get trapped as well because they like to rush inside a lot. They like to press their tackles up the field and then try to work back inside. And that quite often leads to a quarterback turning the corner and getting outside the pocket. So I don't think we'll contain Wilson particularly well, and you guys know exactly how good Wilson can be when he's not contained.
Yeah, even when he is contained, he somehow manages to get...
Yes, very true.
On Sunday, he was the first quarterback ever for like 40 years to throw two passes over 45 yards in a game or something in the fourth quarter. Some random stat they find a way to make up.
Really?
So what is the outsider's view on the Seahawks this year? Obviously, we possibly look at it. We try not to. We possibly do look at it with the rose tinted. But what's the outsider's view on the Seahawks this year?
You're still like I think they've lost a little bit of that intimidating factor. Mm-hmm. They're still obviously one of the better teams in the NFL. And that defense, while it's not quite the 2012, 2013 sort of Legion of Boom intimidating factor, they're still very, very good. Offensively, I've always felt their offensive line has held them back. And in fact, I wrote a piece earlier in the season saying their offensive line will stop them from winning the Super Bowl. And obviously, you've addressed that somewhat with Dwayne Brown, but I mean, you've still got four other guys that I probably couldn't name on your offensive line. So, I think that's mainly what holds you back. I wouldn't be too... Russell Wilson's the guy that kind of holds your offense together while the defense wins you games. And that's not to slight on Russell Wilson. He's very, very good. And his ability to scramble and create plays when plays shouldn't be able to be created is outstanding. Yeah. But the offense, it's incredible. The lack of... just the lack of talent you guys have got on the offensive line and the lack of urgency to address that offensive line has surprised me. And that alone makes me think the Seahawks aren't quite good enough to go all the way. But they're still obviously one of the better teams, certainly in the NFC and definitely in the NFL. And they'll... With the rise of the Rams, I think you've got a good opponent there. Certainly in a few years when they've been able to fill out their roster a little bit more, I think they could potentially overtake you. But that's possibly me. I love Sean McVay. I'm a huge fan of his offense, so that's possibly bias on my behalf.
Rams turn to be that trendy team to come and knock off the Seahawks. We had the Cardinals try. They've suffered. We've had the 49ers try, and look where they are now. It's the Rams turn for a little bit.
Yeah. I think
it's true.
I think they'll give you a good run for your money. Particularly if they can keep Wade Phillips and his defense playing well. I think Sean McVay will take care of that offense, and they'll be a good team. But yes, the Seahawks, from an outsider's perspective, obviously still a very good team, still a contender, but I think the offensive line lets you down, and I think that will hinder you from winning the Super Bowl.
Yeah, the offensive line has improved the last month or so, hasn't it, Russ? And obviously with the move they made on yesterday with Dwayne Brown, really does set the table for the rest of the year. But yeah, it's still... I mean, Adam, who also is out today, but he always says he just doesn't want... All he wants from the O-line is not to be shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's basically what we kind of can escape with Russell Wilson, as you say. Yeah. It's been quite tough to get to that level as well, really. with coaches and players.
PFF grade was something like minus 38.
That was after the first game. He has unsurprisingly improved since then. So, Mark, what's if score prediction for Sunday?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'll say something like 24-10 to the Seahawks.
Okay.
And that might be generous. Maybe 24-9. Maybe 27-9. Yeah, let's adjust that to 27-9 with 3 field goals for the Skins.
Obviously, I mean, you're on your second, third kicker of the season as well, aren't you? Because Dustin Hopkins.
Yeah, Dustin Hopkins has an injury and he's on IR. They are hoping that he might be one of the guys that they could return from IR. But yes, they are on a guy that I don't think he'd played in the NFL before. He's got a good leg, he can kick along, but he's not desperately accurate. So yes, they are on a backup kicker.
Yeah, so our boss, really, after that, our left guard by committee kind of doesn't seem so bad with all those injuries.
No, rotating those two guys around seems like a good strategy.
Yeah. Massive thanks for jumping on with us, Mark. Where can people read your stuff and follow you on social media and everything?
It's at Mark Bullock NFL on Twitter, and then just the Washington Post insider blog for the Redskins coverage.
Yeah, and as someone who does follow Mark on Twitter, you always do the game breakdowns and put them into moments, which is pretty cool. Obviously, we don't really follow much Redskins, but it's a pretty cool way to see how they attack things and go at things. Obviously, as you said earlier, DJ Swearinger is possibly one of your favourite players of the season so far, isn't he?
Yeah. He's I mean, it might be slightly because we've not had any sort of safety since Sean Taylor. Not really had any decent safety at all. So Swearinger is above average to good, and that is the best thing that they've had in the secondary for a long time. But yes, he's definitely one of my favorite players to watch at the moment, and the way he takes away routes and anticipates stuff. So yes, he's very good. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Sean Taylor, that was a special player, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Every safety that they've had since then has kind of had the curse of trying to fulfill that sort of talent, and nobody can live up to that because he was potentially one of the best, maybe three safeties of all time.
Idolizes him, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, every young safety now does. The way he was so physical against the run, and if anyone came over the middle and he broke down on them, there's the famous play of Terrell Owens running a post route and Sean Taylor breaking down on it. And Terrell Owens going nowhere near the football, pulling up because he saw Sean Taylor coming at him. So, he was a very physically imposing dude and a fantastic in coverage as well. Yeah. So hard to replace him.
Yeah, but yeah, enjoy the game to a certain level on Sunday, Mark. And again, thanks for coming on. If there's any 2018 Redskins trip, so I have to get you back on and see if that injury list is shortened or what any longer.
Man, I hope so. I hope it shortens. Thanks for having me on, guys.
No worries. Cheers, Mark.
But we'll see. That might be a little steep. Not sad. Let's be conservative. I think today we'll have 20, maybe 25, but it's growing.
Somebody that you've tried to get on board who has just outright refused?
Jimmy and Doug. Jimmy and Doug have just been bad teammates. Really, really terrible teammates. In fact, if you guys all want to tweet at them and maybe cyberbully them into wearing them, I would appreciate it.
So yeah, massive thanks to Mark for joining us and talking to Redskins. That is quite a lengthy injury list and injury bug that the Redskins have, isn't it, Russ?
Yeah, I feel a little bit bad for them. I was laughing for most
of
that.
I
hate that to happen to us.
Yeah. Well, I was like, the backup when we injured, and yes, he is. I mean, you wait all year for an NFL season and then you get 20 odd injuries to your players before Thanksgiving. And as I said, they're not just players, they're starting players as well. It's mad. But yeah, but to finish up this week's pod, we're going to do just a quick lock and shock. Russ, week 9 lock of the week for you is... I started to sound like Rabel then.
I'm going to go with the Rams to beat the Giants. I don't want the Rams to keep winning, but...
Oh, wait, what did I say? Lock?
Yeah. I know.
No. I'm not sure. Off the bye, cross country, Sterling Shepherd's back.
I'm hoping not, because, I mean, the guy I'm playing in fantasy this week has got 7 Rams in his starting lineup.
How? Why?
I don't. He's literally got Goff, Gurley, Higby, Woods.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Watkins, I think. So I really hope they don't win, but I can't see this Giants team doing anything.
Basically, if the Rams don't do anything on offense, he's on point.
I've got Drew Brees. I'm all right. I just wanted him to throw one touchdown.
Yeah, it's
A tough week for locks, though, I think.
No, lock of the week for me is the...
Can't say Eagles.
We can say Seahawks.
We've never said Seahawks on this.
I'm going to go the Texans to beat the Colts. But there is a weird thing where... I mean, Adam doesn't think it exists anymore, but there seems to be a weird hangover when teams play the Seahawks, and especially when the team has a high and low, high and a quick crash like the Texans did last week. It could be a bit of a hangover, but the Colts are terrible. The fact that they even considered trading T.Y. Hilton is just laughable. I'm not even sure what they're doing. I don't know if Ryan Grigson broke back into the building there this week. trying to trade him and their only decent offensive lineman, apparently, is Ryan Costanzo, is just...
Yeah. Weird.
No idea what's going on. That team possibly needs a change of ownership, because Ursay seems way too hormonal at times. Mm. I think the Texans, Adam, Deshaun Watson is a baller. He's a special, special player. He's not someone I thought could do what he did on Sunday. And as I put on Twitter, it's a game where... We've seen Rodgers, we've seen Brady, we've seen both Mannings, we've seen Roethlisberger maybe is the only one closest, but there's been top-tier, Hall of Fame-worthy quarterbacks come into CenturyLink, play Seahawks, and not do what he did on Sunday. It was very shut them down. Yeah, I think the Texans beat the Colts will be my lock of the week, shock of the week. Ross?
The 49ers to get their first win. Does that count?
I mean, 0-8 against what are the cards? 3-4.
I think so. Yeah. I don't know if they throw. I just don't assume they throw Garoppolo straight in there. But
no, I'll be surprised. But
I've got enough to beat this cards team, I think.
The only thing with the Niners is that the injury started to hit. Solomon Thomas is injured. Joe Staley got a forearm to the eye and he's broke his eye socket. So that might be tough. But yeah, I'd go with that. For me though, the shock of the week is the. As my phone freezes, is the...
If it wasn't there for me, it was going to be the Jets to take the Bills down on TNF.
No, I think the... God, it can't really go anywhere else but the 49ers.
Yeah, the games are really, quite even across the board all the way, really.
I mean, yeah, I'd probably agree with you that the 49ers would beat the Cardinals, that's boring.
Because the Lions to beat the Packers isn't a shot because there's no Rodgers and...
I mean, they've traded Jay Ajayi, which is says quite a lot about Jay Ajayi, to be honest. The fact that the Dolphins got rid of him. He's got the most touches in the NFL this season, some like 125 touches without a touchdown. He's the NFL in that not a category I want to lead, but Jay Ajayi does that. So no matter how much Sky Sports tell you, Ajayi possibly isn't that having that good of a season. He's only really, last year was 3 or 4 runs, if you really look at it. His yards per carry wasn't great either.
Yeah, 2 huge games, didn't he, the rest of the time? Fairly run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, I think 49ers is the only clear one. If even that's a bit borderline, because the Cardinals have Drew Stanton at quarterback. I'm going to reverse what your lock. I think the Giants might surprise the Rams, because, as I said, I mean, they're doing what we did, coming off a bye and flying across country, so
it took us a quarter
maybe to wake up. Not sure if you said the drops in the second quarter, but yeah, I think
definitely work with the user consensus, because the Rams are 89%.
I don't see it that being that much of a lot. I mean, it might end up being 40-0 like Dolphins Ravens was, but no one saw that coming. But the Giants with Shepherd and Engram and Eli Manning, and they've had 2 weeks to prepare. I you know, I'm sort of starting to talk myself into it more than anything. But yeah, do you want to do a quick true or false? True or false?
Yeah, we can do one of them. Let's.
Yeah, right. My true or false? This is the one I was going to ask last week. No. The hardest game on the Seahawks schedule remaining is the Jacksonville Jaguars.
It sounds disrespectful to Eagles fans and Cowboys fans, but yes, it is, because that's the game I think I picked at the start of the season and we're going to lose.
Yes, but you didn't pick it for the reasons you're now picking it, to be honest.
No, they look a real team, and it is worrying that they could... that defence looks real. And
yeah.
They've got Marcel Darius now as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite impressive that they, on fantasy terms, they, according to NFL.com, they give up the fewest points to wide receivers and running backs.
Wow.
Which is quite impressive to do, and it's also worrying because I do have AJ Green this week. I've been checking. We'll just go for Julio Jones so everything's right with the world.
So that's our one early game remaining as well.
Yeah, it's the only one we have all season.
Yeah, so that's never good for us. And all the way across country to Jacksonville and against a really solid defense on turf as well, or on grass as well. It's all these things are going to probably count against us. And yeah, I think that's true. Seattle was a good game, but I think we'll win.
I think the Jags wins over the Eagles game because it's on the road. I think being at home makes a difference, and Russell Wilson doesn't lose that often. I think he's only 6 defeats he's had at home over his, 5 years now? 6 years nearly? But yeah, the Eagles game is going to be, that's going to be tasty.
Yeah, that's going to be a good game.
So much fun. I mean, there's a run of 3 home games where it's the Falcons, the Eagles, and the Rams. Mm. So if you've got a season ticket for that month, if they do season tickets, that's definitely a month to have it, because that's going to be, Carson Wentz, look, it's another case of, we said a couple of weeks ago, Mariota and Winston, the second quarterback taken looks a lot better. The first quarterback taken, even could say that about about Deshaun Watson, because he was the third quarterback taken. Was he taken after Holmes? Obviously, he's taken after.
Yeah, Mahomes moved up, didn't they, to get him at 11, I think.
Holmes is still my favorite quarterback of the class. I can't wait for him to
throw
go routes for 60 minutes to Tyreek Hill, and I can't wait for that to happen. Your true or false, Russ?
True or false, the I want to say the Cowboys kind of don't win a game without Zeke, but
it
seemed a slight overreaction. No, I'll go with it, yeah. The Cowboys won't win a game without Zeke Elliott because he has been their entire offense, and Prescott
is
quietly having a little bit of a sophomore slump.
Suspended for 6.
Yeah.
So he misses this week against the Chiefs, at the Falcons, versus the Eagles, versus the Chargers. Ooh, well, hello. Versus the Redskins and at the Giants.
They're not easy games.
Got the Chargers on Thanksgiving. It's the Redskins play. I noticed when I'm talking to Mark, looking for their schedule. They play back to back Thursday night games.
Really?
Yeah, they play on Thanksgiving. They play the week after as well. But Chargers,
the TV schedule has been really weird. They've got 3 Dolphins games in prime time.
The NFL is. Oh, Jerry Jones. Maybe this is why Jerry Jones wants to get rid of Roger Goodell. They've scheduled them on Monday Night Football, then Thanksgiving 3 days later.
Nice.
Why are they? I'm probably going to take that. Their schedule is all over the shop. Not Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football. Yeah, Sunday Night Football. It's because Google's showing UK time, so they've got Sunday, Sunday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, Thursday Night Football. Back to back Thursday night games as well.
They're on TV far too much for a team that's not going to have their superstar player.
They're on TV
every week, it seems. Well, they have been.
They're on TV 4 times in 5 weeks, and I guarantee that the game against the Giants on the 10th will somehow end up on Sky. And then they're on against us, which won't be flexed on Christmas Eve. Jesus. If you're a Cowboys fan, cancel your Game Pass. If you haven't already, because they're just going to be on TV all the time. But I quite like that. I think the only game is possibly going to be the Redskins, going off what Mark said. The Chiefs, if it's at home without Zeke, that's a tough out, because their Chiefs D-line is pretty damn good with Chris Jones and someone else, I can't remember. Then at the Falcons, although they're nowhere near the team they were with Steve Sarkisian, who could have predicted that? And then the Eagles are good. Chargers are sneaky good. Marvin Gordon's having a really, really nice year.
Yeah.
Written off after his rookie year, and his last 2 years have been pretty damn good. He must be near the top in some running back things. And yeah, the Redskins is possibly
the one
clearest game. But it also kind of depends what state the Giants are in by then. But yeah, that's a good shout. Six, yeah. That's a tough schedule. What are they? 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 and 3.
Mm.
Oof.
They could be out of it by the time Zeke gets back and
yeah,
not bother playing him against us. That'd be nice.
Really? Why the hell did they fight it for so long? If he'd been back by then.
Yeah.
I mean, you lost to the Rams, you lost to the Packers, you probably won't go with Ezekiel. Were you gonna, I mean, the games they've won against the Niners, against the Redskins, against the Giants, and against the Cardinals, are they really not going to win those games?
Well, yeah.
Without Ezekiel, I mean.
Mm. That's not a murderer's row of teams they've beat, is it?
No. I mean, and they got sideswiped by the Broncos when Trevor Siemian was a functioning quarterback.
Yeah.
A time ago. Now, but yeah, I quite like that one. I might actually see if there's a betting market for that one. That's quite good. Where can people get hold of the podcast and all the usual plugs and shenanigans, Ross?
All that stuff. You can get us on Patreon. You can back us for just $1 a month. We're now just $6 away from our target, and all that money goes straight to charity via Hawkwogger. You can get that patreon.com/thepedestrianpodcast. And of course, we are sponsored this week by the, I'm get this wrong now, 12-man fan jam show. That yeah. Sounds right. They're backing us at the sponsor level. So thank you very much for that. We're going to get one of the guys on the podcast soon to review a game with us. That's one of the perks of backing us at that level.
If perks is the right word to spend an hour talking to me and.
It's a definite perk. You can find us on Twitter at SeaHawkersUK, and you can get us on Podbean at thepedestrianpodcast.podbean.com. And this is our 50th podcast.
It is, yeah. I mean, we're basically like the Joe Root of... so who's the Jeffrey Boycott of the podcast?
Definitely Adam.
Yeah. Yeah, no. The Boycott's a lot more... So I think you're the Boycott. You're very straight-laced and...
No, thanks. Straight I'm Northern as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Do you want some quick stats for people listening?
What, 50 podcasts? 50 is up, as TMS says.
Yeah. If you average out all of our listens and downloads and everything for the entire 50 episodes, we're totaling in at 5,350 listens per episode.
Which is 5,500 more than we get comments.
It so, is, yeah. If you listen to us, comment. We're all across all these places. Leave us comments.
Yeah. We've got a few questions from a few guys, which we could cover if you wanted to. Just remembered that.
Yeah, go on. But yeah, leave us comments. Don't wait for Stu to fly across to New York to say us you like us. Just let us know.
Right, yeah. So we asked for questions. Chris Baldwin asked, true or false, Russell Wilson is the most underrated quarterback in the NFL. That's easy. No. He's not the most underrated quarterback in the NFL because he's quite highly rated by everyone. It's a weird chip to have on the shoulder. Russell Wilson at this point is nowhere near underrated, Russ.
No, it seems to be a push for him to be the MVP this season as well. So
yeah. That's a very strange way to treat a quarterback as underrated. Give him the biggest individual honour you can in the league. Nick Drake asked about 70,000 questions. It's like a Trivial Pursuit when you ask Nick Drake to ask his questions, but we greatly appreciate it, Nick. First one, is Richardson now the first wide receiver behind Baldwin rather than Lockett? Adam messaged me this on Monday saying he is. He is, but that's no detriment to Lockett, though, at the same time, is it?
No, I think it's more of a committee and more of whichever one of you two guys gets open, then you're getting the ball if Baldwin's covered. They're both kind of at the same level, I think, for me. Richardson's getting... The end zone looks more, but that's because he's making those spectacular catches. So why not just keep giving him the ball?
Yeah, I mean, he should have had 3 touchdowns on Sunday. Yeah. Also from Nick, how big a difference do you think Dwayne Brown will make? As we said to Mark, I don't think it'll make a big difference, but it's not to the detriment of the rest of the line. I think the rest of the line has been pretty damn solid when they haven't faced a monster that is Javon Clowney.
Yeah, yeah, the rest of the line on PFF grades out pretty well, actually. It's just that left tackle that's dragging the entire thing down.
The biggest difference Dwayne Brown will probably make is the running game. Because they, especially with someone like Rawls and McKissick, especially, you can get outside. Dwayne Brown will hold down, like we saw with Whitworth and Ramsey's going to hold down and keep contain the edge kind of thing.
Well, there was one play Sunday where Odiemba got blew back into, I think it was Lacey, and knocked him over.
No. Odiemba got blown out of the way and Clowney then ran over Trey Madden and then Lacey or Rawls for about a 7-yard loss. Next question. Sean asked, who are the... Well, at this point, I think we should change Sean Wilson's name to Sean Walsh. Some heroes so far this season under the radar, but contributing. Blair Walsh is a possible example. Unsung heroes so far. I don't know. Russ?
As much as Jermaine Defedi absolutely irritates me with his stupid penalty calls.
Yeah.
He has been a very good right tackle, especially in pass pro this year.
Yeah. I mean, the whole offensive line should be hung, drawn, quartered for the running game, but Defedi's been quietly efficient on the right hand side. I'll probably go Defedi gets a bad rap because he's kind of like in the Brennan Giacomini Hall of Fame for giving away silly penalties he did on Sunday. But
and Walsh's been good as well. He's just come in and done his job.
Yeah, but I think Walsh can just kind of get on with it, kind of thing. It was only going to get any headlines if he missed.
Yeah.
And we just miss. We do get the headlines. So, I think Defedi's quite a good one. Dave Bailey asks, which starter on either offense or defense is most likely to be traded away at season's end? I think we've just got back the bloke. This is going to be. I think he's probably gone. I think it's Jeremy Lane. On offense, you are probably... I mean, there's no one really. You could probably just cut the ones you're going to possibly trade.
One's going to trade for any of them.
Nick Vanette might be a name to watch as a possible. I'm not sure why any NFL team would give anything up for him, but he could be the only real likely one on offense to be traded. But I think, again, as I said, I think on the offensive side, if you want to get rid of him, just cut him because the core is there. The front five is probably there for 2018. Obviously, the receiver, quarterback. No one's going to take Reddy Lacey's contract. So, I think if you're going to get rid of anyone on offense, it's going to be cut. Ross?
Yeah, I can't really see. I mean, no one's trading for any of them. Maybe because Richardson's going to in a contract year, but he's going to, I reckon, we'll re-sign him for a fairly team-friendly deal. So, unless he kicks up a fuss and wants lots of money, then could be gone, but definitely not traded at this point.
Yeah, I agree. Nick Drake again. Will Earl Thomas like to be out against Washington? And I'll also added that I don't think he's going to play against the Cardinals next Thursday either. How do we think McDougal will compare to Terrell? The thing with McDougal is he's got a lot more starting experience than Stephen Terrell has. And also, I think with the health of Chancellor, they can do things differently than they did with Terrell, because Terrell was basically just left on the island. And maybe they learned the lesson that they can't put anyone bar Earl Thomas that far back on his own. So there's going to be a different look to the defense, but he's going to be better than Terrell. But that's no slight on Stephen Terrell, because he was definitely thrown in the deep end. And also the Washington Cardinal games are a lot more comfortable than the ones that Stephen Terrell faced. Russ?
Yeah, definitely. Terrell was thrown in against what the Bucks was in, Mike Evans and those guys. And I mean, I don't think we play single high safety quite as much. I think Cam drops back and we play a more traditional two safety role. But yeah, that's fine. They've both got, well, McDougal's got a lot of starting experience. Like I said, he's a very serviceable safety in this league.
Also, I don't think McDougal will get all the snaps. I think Tedrick Thompson will. He's been inactive. He definitely will be active, I think, on Sunday. I think he could be someone to keep out, because he's at Colorado, he got his hands on the ball quite a lot as well. Next one, Nick, again, what do you think of Ian Rappaport's report that Jimmy Graham was about to be traded? I think I pretty much tweeted my thoughts of that out. whenever Ian Rappaport does anything about the Seahawks, wait for someone proper to report on it and then go from there. Ian Rappaport, I'm not too sure what he was playing at. The one guy to watch with Seahawks stuff is Jason Lacafora. He broke the Frank Clark thing, but we're picking him 20 hours before we selected him a couple of years ago. Him and Jay Glazer seem to be the two. And Jay Glazer, haven't really seen much from him this year, but
no, he seems to dropped off a little bit, didn't
he? Ian Rappaport, this is going to be on record, so I'm going to watch what I say, but. You go for my Twitter at @Stuart_Court and see how I reacted to Ian Rappaport tweeting it and getting it wrong. More considerably, considering the quality, this is again from Nick, of players the Seahawks have had on the defensive line. What's happened to Death Row this season? Not a lot. They did get 5 sacks on Sunday.
Yeah, they've been all right. I don't think they've been terrible. They've not kind of lived up to the massive expectations, but
yeah, but they were massive expectations.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And other teams are allowed to play well against us as well. I think the biggest thing with the defensive line is the run game, where they kind of haven't, apart from the final drive on Sunday where Sheldon and Bennett saved the game for the Seahawks with ankle tackles of Lamar Miller. I don't think they've been that bad. I mean, they're getting the sacks, they're not getting the pressure, but with how the Seahawks set up in the secondary, the teams attack as quickly, apart from Deshaun Watson, who just throws it halfway.
Shows no respect to the secondary.
Yeah, I don't think it's been that bad. It's just, as Ross said, expectations were rather high. Yeah. Andy Robinson, running back, where do we go from here? Just wait till Chris Carson. Chris Carson's got 2 fully functioning legs, isn't it, Ross?
Yeah, those rushing stats before Wilson decided to do some running in the fourth quarter this week were abysmal. One of the worst I've ever seen.
I think this LASIK experience
has to stop.
I think abysmal's being rather kind.
Yeah. Was it 1 yard, I think? Or maybe 3, I think.
I think it was two.
Two.
They had like 9 runs of a loss on their game.
Ridiculous. They just kept running at Clowney.
Yeah, that's the thing. They kept, like, a couple of weeks ago we said don't run the ball at Aaron Donald, and then they spent the whole game running at Aaron Donald. They didn't learn.
The definition of crazy is doing the same thing over and over again.
The one you look at the Texans before the game. We said, like, last week, you look at the Texans and you say, like, who's their one player on defensive line? Okay, Clowney. Okay, we'll run anywhere. But, I mean, he'd have probably caught him because he's an absolute freak of nature.
Yeah.
Come on, lads.
Anyway, he rushed 6 carries for 0 yards.
I mean, that's remaining to a t-shirt.
Rules went 6 for -1.
But Rules looked better. Rules just looks better. He's still a bit. I think Gordon posted on our group chat that he needs a Valium. But he just looks better when he does it. McKissick definitely looks better. It's predictable because you know what's coming.
Yep.
Even though the final 2 drives, why were the Texans biting on every play action when we've got -17? They bit on every play action. You play it in the park, and you just play you and your mate, and you run back and pretend to hand it off. That's what Russell Wilson was doing, throwing it 40 yards downfield.
Yeah, Wilson's heart was not in those play actions either. He was just making a gesture.
Just stretching his arm out. Oh, yeah. No, we all know where this is going. Don't. And then one more question. I think there's a question on Twitter as well, Ross, if you want to go and dig that up.
Yeah.
One more question on Facebook. Gavin Hart asks, we've had a lot of variables in terms of O-line and still failed, so is our constant Tom Cable the problem? Probably. But Tom is probably going to be the next head coach of your Seattle Seahawks, so get used to it.
I like it because it's not going away.
No, yeah. I think if it was going away, it had gone away by now.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
I mean, yeah, but also to be fair to him, the worst thing about Tom Cable is that they're never ready to play in week 1. They're always ready to play by about week 6 or 7, which we're seeing yet again this year. Obviously, that's just going to, hopefully, you'd expect improve with Dwayne Brown. But that's the biggest bugbear. They have all off season. They do all. I mean, I know they don't get as much time with the players with this CBA than they have in like 5-10 years ago. They would have, but that's the biggest bugbear, isn't it? Really, that so undercooked in week 1.
Yeah, and that we forget about it every time as well, and we think we're going to start off hot. We know this.
Yeah, but it's just... But, yeah, just get used to cable, because, I mean, I've spent, what, 7 podcasts in the same issue firing?
We titled one of them, I think, that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if he was going to go, they'd have gone by now, because he's now finally got some investment on the airline with... because of Jeremy Lane's, I'm guessing, muscles. He failed his physical. He's still here, so we have to give him an extra pick. So we've got all the picks going into Dwayne Brown. We've got 16, 17 million going into Britton Jokel, and then you've got the first round pick of the Fedi on the outside, and the second round pick for Posich as well. Jesus, that's no airline all of a sudden.
Yeah, we can't kind of throw that. Oh, there's no investment in it.
No, because we've got the 20 million and 3, maybe 4, depending on what they do in this draft,
yeah.
Top picks.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a weird realisation. Yeah. Any questions on the old Twitter?
Just the one from Cameron. He says, we should have asked this to Mark earlier, but looking at the Skins' depleted O-line and wide receiver court, what stand-ins should we look out for? I can't really pick one. I think just we've got to stop Chris Thompson because he's everything for them.
Yeah.
I think Bobby and KJ, even though KJ's not having the greatest season, they think that they can kind of smother him.
You'd expect so.
But outside of that, I mean, what stand-ins are there? Ryan Grant, maybe? They've got Brian Quick on the roster.
Oh, God, is he still up there? How's he still there and Colin Kaepernick isn't? I don't care. But Colin Kaepernick isn't. I mean, as I said on Twitter, it looks like they're signing Brian Hoyer. But if the Patriots signed Colin I think I would just walk away from the sport.
I think so would Goodell.
I don't think it would get any better. Patriots with the most openly and outwardly Trump-supporting owner, Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
And Colin, I mean, the internet would explode.
It's set up Donald, for it.
Donald Trump, they're not going to. It looks like they signed Brian Hoyer. Brian is already in Foxborough for a visit, but... it's too perfect for words. Like I said, it's like the Seth Rollins in wrestling steel chair to the back of the signing video would need my way, like WrestleMania 17. It would just be the best. But yeah, it's not gonna happen. But yeah, that would have been perfect. I think Chris Thompson is the big one to watch on offer. It is going to be interesting to see how they attack the safeties. I didn't realise Swearingen was so close, was so banged up, so that could be interesting because Swearingen does fly around, and if you got two rookies, but I think Monte Nicholson must be a rookie, he's only 22.
Yes.
two rookies back there, and Doug Baldwin doing what Doug Baldwin does, and Russell Wilson just throwing it down 40 yards downfield, I think that could be a spot to... thing, but yeah, we definitely should have asked that, Mark. Never mind. This has been, as always, the Pedestrian Podcast. Next week with the Thursday night game against the Cardinals, we are going to try and do another live one like we did last year with the Rams game on Thursday night. Just keep an eye on Twitter and Facebook for all that. To all the 25 plus, Sean, Mark, Scott, Gordon, and Ian, who saw this week's game, Andy Robinson, everyone else who's going out there. Rob Staten, who's also find the podcast, friend of the podcast that I refer to him as. To everyone going out for the Redskins game, enjoy it. I hope it's not as stressful as it was this Sunday. doesn't have the finish it does, but I hope it,
handle one of them.
Hope you all come back. I think I might be kicked out of my house if we have no. if everyone goes out, just enjoy the game. Enjoy Seattle if it's your first time. It is a place and game day experience like nothing else. This has been the Pedestrian Podcast. Until next week, beat the Texans and
go Hawks!
That is going to do it. 12, they're bringing the trophy home. Your Seahawks. Super Bowl 48 champions!